We've been sold the idea that financial independence is all about some number on your account statement. Or even worse, that you don't qualify because of where you started out. That's just not true. It's not about some well-kept secret of the wealthy. It's about finding the right information and knowing how to apply it. On the Get Ready for the Future show, we're answering your questions so you can start making real financial change today. The journey to true financial independence begins right here, and it starts with you.
Online, on podcast, on radio, wherever you get the Get Ready for the Future show, we are glad that you are watching or listening. We are here to help people discover, protect, and share true financial independence. My name is Scott Inman, and Janet Walker is with me today getting set to answer your questions. And Janet, we've got a good one today later in the show about how do I know if I'm saving enough for retirement? And that question is one we get quite frequently in the client meeting rooms and several here on the Get Ready for the Future show. And the reality is America doesn't know that answer, especially if they haven't planned. And most people are not doing that. I got some new numbers here for you that I wanted to share with you as we get rolling today. A new Go Banking Rate survey of more than 1,000 adults found that 28% of people have nothing saved for the future. 39% are not currently contributing to a retirement fund, and another 30% don't think they'll ever be able to retire. We've talked about the retirement crisis on this show before. Those numbers bear that out.
I mean, when you talk about 28% not having anything saved for the future, I mean, think about one in four. If you're sitting in a room with three other people besides you, one of you has literally nothing. That's a little bit mind-boggling for me. But Scott, you were talking about the question of do I have enough, and that being a very common question. I would say that that is probably the catalyst for most people to come in here is to get that answer, and they're looking at each other as husband and wife and going, are we going to be able to do this? Like, and we're at the point where we want to retire, but do we have enough?
Yep. And certainly if you have nothing, you know the answer is no, I don't. But when you get 500,000, 600,000, you know it's your nest egg, you know you've done well saving, but you don't know, is it going to be enough? Put some more legs on those numbers. 71% have $100,000 or less. I'm sorry. 71% have $100,000 or less. 10% are between 50 and 100. 33% have less than 50, and 28%, as we mentioned, had none. And according to the Federal Reserve, the median retirement account savings for households between ages 55 and 60 is roughly $185,000. So those are people that are right up on the door of retirement, and certainly $185,000, while it's a lot of money, it is not a lot of money when it comes to retirement. All right, so we'll get into that question about how do I know if I'm saving enough. But first up on the show today is Sammy from Little Rock. I'm 60, and I've got $700,000 saved for retirement. Way to go, Sammy, on that. When should I look at claiming Social Security, and how does that fit into the whole picture? Well, first, Sammy, thanks for asking us. Let me say this right off the bat. A lot of people get their Social Security advice around the water cooler. You know, now that's an analogy we use for people around them, their coworkers, their family, and their friends. If you are going to take Social Security advice from family, friends, or coworkers, stop doing that right now. And start by asking a financial professional, particularly a financial planner. And we're going to get into when to claim. A lot of people believe, Janet, that you should start as early as you can because it may not be there. Well, let's start with that conversation really quickly to get that out of the way. It's going to be there. It has to be there.
Well, and the reason people do that is they're going, hey, this is a government system. I don't really trust what they're doing. But here's the thing that you can trust about our government is your elected officials want to be reelected. And that is probably the most important thing to most of them, not all, but to many of them. That is very important. And when you look at Social Security, if they fail to fix this, then they're not going to get reelected, and they know it. And so, Scott, the other thing that I would say in this area of the conversation is that they have fixed it before and elongated the process of how long it was going to last. But people didn't realize. But when you think about, you know, the full retirement age used to be age 65. Well, then they've spread it out to where it goes up to age 67. That was a fix to the Social Security platform. they'll do something again. We don't know what, but they will do it because they want to be reelected. So we feel certain that it'll be there. Plus the fact that, you know, when they talk about Social Security going bankrupt, Scott, it's not the same as an individual going bankrupt. If you go bankrupt and you don't have any income, then that's just it, period. But in Social Security, if the trust fund is depleted, then there is still money coming in every single month because you and I are still working. We're right. still paying into the system mm-hmm. along with millions of others. So it is very different. It's not like it's going to go from you're getting $2,000 a month to you're getting nothing, even if they don't fix it.
Yeah. And if you're making a decision, Sammy, on when to claim, obviously Sammy tells us he's 60. So the earliest he could claim is 62. One of the things you have to know there is, are you going to retire at 62? Because if you're not, then it probably isn't going to be the best claiming strategy to start taking the income from Social Security, the benefit from Social Security at age 62, because there are earnings limitations on that when you take an early benefit. Meaning, if you make income through an employer, through a job, reportable income, the limitations are $22,320 in 2024. In other words, if you're 62 and you take Social Security and you make more than $22,320, they'll actually reduce your benefit $1 for every $2 that you are over that $22,320. So in most cases, it's not going to make sense if you're going to keep working. Now, full retirement age for Sammy is 67. That is not the biggest benefit.
That's
though.
Right.
That's a misnomer.
As a former teacher, I used to tell my kids all the time, whether it's my students or my actual children, I would tell them, look, if there are bonus points available, you need to go for them. Don't leave those sitting on the table. And the same thing is true of Social Security. There are bonus points available, okay? So age 67, full retirement age, but each year that you delay from 67 up to age 70, there's an 8% increase. So if age 67 is your 100% benefit, then if you delay to age 68, it's 108%. Then it's 116, then it's 124. So would you rather have a 100% check or 124% check? And that's not all there is to it. Obviously, it's not always just delay and get the bigger check. There is more that needs to go into this decision that you're making as a household. But it is important to know that full retirement age does not mean the biggest check.
Yeah, and once you reach full retirement age, that earnings limit goes away. So at 67, you can still work and claim Social Security. So that's out of the way. And then another question for Sammy was, he doesn't tell us if he's married. Marital status, important to the overall plan here, because we want to incorporate the household income plan. So it's likely we might have two Social Security checks. And that's true even if your spouse never worked or did not work enough to earn a credit. You know, a lot of people come in here and mm-hmm. say, my spouse, well, their Social Security benefit's only going to be like $300. But if the other spouse's benefit is going to be $2,000 at full retirement age, they're going to get more than that $300 for the spouse.
Well, and Scott, it's really hard for couples to know that, because you get your statement as the husband, your wife gets her statement as the wife. You never see anything from Social Security that puts you together as a household. And certainly not, you know, in the case of widows or widowers or divorcees, they never are able to really see what that picture looks like. Now, you can go into the Social Security Administration, you can have an appointment, you can get that information. So it is available, but it's not going to come to you in the mail. And so we ask our clients to do a little bit of homework from time to time to be able to gather this information so that we can help them go through the planning process and determine, really, Scott, the best planning approach for their household. It is not really an individual decision.
Yeah, and we certainly don't have the time to go over all of the considerations, but, you know, Janet alluded to it there. If you're divorced, there are some considerations that might affect your benefit. Mm-hmm. If you're widowed or you're a widower, there are some considerations that might affect your benefit. So it does need to be worked through in a holistic financial plan. And the second part of Sammy's question, how does it fit into the overall picture? You need an overall retirement income plan, and Social Security is one, maybe the only, foundational income that you'll have in retirement, meaning it's not going to run out. It's not going to be subject to market fluctuation. It's guaranteed for the rest of your life. And that is a foundational piece to the puzzle when it comes to building an overall income plan. So I would say, Sammy, reach out to a financial advisor, one who plans. We do that here at GenWealth. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can call us toll-free, 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. Our next question is from Mitch in Bryant. How could a part-time job or side gig impact my retirement plan? For context, I'm 58 and looking to at least partially retire by 62. I've got $275,000 in my 401k and another $450,000 in other savings and investments. Okay, so Mitch, we're going to have to take this as a two-parter, because when he asked how could a part-time job or side gig impact his retirement plan, we're not entirely sure if he's asking before I retire,
right,
or after I retire. So we're going to cover both.
Yeah. So if you're still working, really this gives you, Mitch, a very good opportunity to kind of get your financial house in order. And it may not be out of order, but to get it in a better place, we'll say. So if you think about, if you have debt, even at this point, including your mortgage, that's not something that we really focus a lot on paying down early in life. But we would ideally like for your mortgage to be gone by the time that you retire. It gives you a lot more flexibility at that point. So if you're able to take that extra income from your side gig and focus on paying off debts and also supplementing your retirement accounts, it may be that you're in a situation where you're not maxing out a 401k. Maybe you're maxing out the match, but not the most that you could contribute. So maybe you utilize, if your side gig probably doesn't have a retirement plan, that's the way those usually are, if you don't have that available to you, you can actually increase what you're contributing through your primary job to your 401k or whatever retirement plan you have, and then use the side gig money to live off of. So there's a lot of flexibility there to just move you forward if we're talking about a side gig prior to retirement.
And then at retirement, he's saying he's at least partially going to retire by age 62. You know, I was in a client meeting just yesterday with a 44-year-old client, and, you know, it's a little farther off. The distance is greater there, and he's having a hard time determining exactly what that retirement date is going to be for him. But he told me in that meeting, he said, by age 60, I don't want to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we're talking about two different things. We're not necessarily talking about retirement. We may be talking about, I think we are talking about financial independence, which means by 60, we've now got a clear, definitive plan for him to be financially independent. If he chooses not to work at all, then he is retired. But he may want to do something else to supplement. And we can make a plan that shows Mitch, both options. What would it look like if I cold turkey retire at 62, right? I'm done and I'm living completely off Social Security and my investments. But if that's not something that is doable for him, he can say, well, what if I added in, let's say, $30,000 a year in part-time income? That's how that role works in retirement. When you're building an overall income plan, you can take some stress off your assets and potentially have more income in retirement if you're willing to work part-time.
Yeah, and we created our own little word for that here at GenWealth. We call it worktirement, and it's really becoming more and more popular. And Scott, some people are doing it for financial reasons, and Mitch is asking about the financial impact, but I think it's also important to consider the psychological impact. And this is not absolutely a guy thing, but we do see it more in males than we do in females, that men tend to define who they are through their job. And then many times when they retire, frankly, they don't know who they are anymore. And they struggle sometimes even in their marriage, but they struggle with who they are and now what is their purpose in life. And so sometimes doing a side gig gives them that purpose. It doesn't consume 40 hours a week, but it gives them purpose. And frankly, it could be volunteer work in the worktirement phase. It doesn't necessarily have to be for a paycheck. But Scott, it goes back to what you're saying about, like, what are the needs? Do you need to have something that's going to supplement your retirement? You mentioned maybe $30,000 or something like that. But many times we see people will do jobs like this on the side through retirement, and it pays for the extra things. It pays for vacations. It pays for, you know, taking the kids to Disney. That is not a cheap trip, but we have a lot of clients who do that. So those types of things are definite possibilities.
Yeah. The bottom line here, ultimately, as simplistic as we can say it is, in retirement, you are trying to replace your paycheck, right? You had full-time employment, maybe you had two full-time employments if both spouses worked, and you're trying to replace that to some degree, maybe not 100%, but we have to define what your income needs and desires are. Get that down. And in our software, Janet, when we go through the Ready to Retire process, each source of income has its own color. I love the illustration that we have with our income conductor. And that investment color, the money that's coming to you on a monthly basis from your investments, is green. So if you look at that and it's all green at 62 for Mitch, that means he's going to need more assets, just as simply as we can put it. So if we can layer in some other colors in there, like Social Security, like some part-time employment income, and you know, many of our clients have rental income from houses, rental income from farmland, those types of things can be layered in there as well. But I love early on in retirement, squeezing that green down a little bit so that it's going to last longer.
Absolutely.
Hey, this is our question of the week. I want to thank Mitch for sending it in, and we're going to send Mitch a free Get Ready for the Future Show tumbler for being the question of the week. We just need you to claim it. Email it. Email us at show@getreadyforthefuture.com, Mitch, to claim it. We are answering your questions as we do each and every week on the Get Ready for the Future Show, and if you've got one, we want you to send it in to us, and here's how you do it. You can call and leave a voicemail or text the question to 501-381-5228, or you can send us an email to that same address that I mentioned for Mitch, show@getreadyforthefuture.com. So if you're hearing us now, watching us now, and something's on your mind about something that we've already talked about in the previous two questions, or you have something else on your mind, don't wait. Go ahead and shoot the text out right now to 501-381-5228, or send us an email if you're around your computer, show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Next up, it's Jenny via text, and she writes, I have $200,000 in savings or investment accounts at 44. I know retirement is a long way off, but how do I know if I'm saving enough? Great question, Jenny, and that takes us back to what we were talking about at the top of the program. No one really knows if they're saving enough or how much they're going to need without a plan. And I would suggest, first and foremost, Jenny, get in touch with a financial advisor and build a plan that starts to connect the dots, that starts to input variables that we don't have here. She knows retirement's a long way off, just like my client who is also 44, who I was talking to yesterday. Determining a date in the future where you are going to switch from accumulation to distribution of your investments is vital to knowing if you are saving enough. But that can change, but you just got to start somewhere.
Absolutely. And I think, Scott, it's also important for Jenny to think about this. And this may just be a choice of words thing. It may not be what I'm hearing in this, but there is a distinct difference between savings and investing. And in the question, it says, I have $200,000 in savings or investment accounts. And then talking about, you know, if I'm saving enough. The question is that, you know, like $190,000 in savings and $10,000 in investments, or is it reversed or somewhere in between? And we don't know. If you have $190,000 in investments at age 44, I can tell you, you are well ahead of most people. If you have that much in savings, you're well ahead on your emergency fund, but you need to really focus on the investments. But it's important to distinguish, just think about a timeline. You want to have 3 to 6 months of expenses in savings, but then beyond that, you should be able to focus the rest of those assets towards more long-term goals and therefore shift that towards investments. And we really look at a timeline of when you're going to utilize those dollars. So we've talked about the emergency fund to have the 3 to 6 months of expenses. But beyond that, if you're saving for a larger purchase, like if you're going to buy a vehicle, that's probably within a 5-year time period that you're looking at if you've already got money set aside for it at this point. So I would not invest that. I would save it. And again, that helps draw the distinction on what is the purpose of these dollars.
Yeah, and because the main reason for that is you have to have something for retirement that is invested in a way that is going to outpace inflation. Because otherwise, you're just putting dollars aside and that dollar is going to be worth less when that long time horizon arrives. We don't know when you're thinking about retiring, but it's certainly probably going to be at least 15 to 20 years. And Jenny, if you put a dollar into that money market account that right now looks pretty good, right now it may be outpacing inflation, but over the next decade and a half to two decades, that's not going to be the case. History tells us that. So the growth strategy, which really the only two asset classes that have outpaced inflation over a long period of time, historically speaking, are equities and real estate. So looking at asset classes that can grow so that you'll have beaten inflation by the time you arrive at retirement and can replace your income is key there. But she is talking about how does she know if she's saving enough, really not talking about the investments. And I think it's important to point out your contribution rate is more important. Studies have shown this is more important than your rate of return.
Yes.
You certainly want to be in a growth strategy, but too many people get caught up on, did I beat the S&P 500? Did I get 9% when it got 8? And did I get 7% when it got 8? And am I failing? My measure of success is based on my rate of return. And that's just not true. Now, granted, if you're losing every year because you're in a high-risk investment, that matters.
Sure.
But if you put it on a steady balance, to your point, of risk versus reward in an equity growth portfolio, the rate of return is the rate of return, but how much you put in matters more.
It does matter. And also, I would say that the amount that you lose is more important than the amount that you gain.
Correct.
And that may take a minute for people to process, but let me give you an example. Let's use $100,000 for easy math. If your investment, whatever it is, XYZ investment, goes down 10%, okay, then you're at $90,000. If then the next year it goes up 10%, you're at 99. And people don't think about it. They think, okay, it's down 10, it's up 10, I should be back at 100. That's not the way it works, because you're coming up 10% off of a smaller dollar amount. So think about it this way. If you are at 100,000 and you go down 40%, now you're at 60,000. If you come up 40%, you're at 84,000. So the amount that you go down is really vastly more important. It's Scott, we talked about this on a recent show, and we're going to talk about it in just a little bit, about sequence of return. Mm-hmm. Those negative returns have a far greater impact on your overall lifespan of your portfolio than the positives do.
Yeah. And as we've talked about already in this show, retirement is an income problem. It is not an asset problem. Obviously, the assets matter. But to that point, Jenny, it is still valuable, even at 44 years old, to sit down with a financial advisor and build your retirement income plan. We mentioned that with it being a long ways off, maybe that initial choice of a retirement age, a retirement date, doesn't actually come to fruition. Maybe it's sooner, maybe it's later, but getting a target down there helps, because it will give you some information. It will show you that, okay, if I'm choosing to retire at age 60, for instance, and I have a pension that is going to be able to be accessed at 60 years old, and then I layer in Social Security at, let's say, 67 years old, there's some income that doesn't have to come from your assets, but that planning process will tell you at the end of my work life, I need X amount of dollars saved in retirement accounts. And then we can back engineer, if you will, into where you are now with your $200,000, assuming that's all in retirement accounts. She says she does have some savings, but whatever the number is, and we'll be able to actually give you a monthly contribution rate that will get you to that goal, that asset goal, that will then translate into a monthly income in retirement. If you have questions for us, call or text them to us at 501-381-5228 to hear your questions on the air. You can also send us an email, send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. Last up today on the Get Ready for the Future show is Roger in Fayetteville, and he writes, I thought I was okay to retire a few years ago, but I got spooked when everything shut down and the market took a hit. Inflation is still relatively high, and I'm still working because I'm scared that I won't actually have enough money saved. I've heard a lot of talk about the market facing another big downturn, too. What are my options? Well, Roger, if you got spooked when everything shut down, I'm going to assume that was COVID. I hope you didn't pull out of the market, because that blip on the radar from a market perspective was very short. We soared back up in 2021. Obviously, 2022, another market downturn. And here's the reality. I'll give a little bit of our thoughts on the market to start here. It is an election year, and I think that probably is driving a lot of the spookiness around investors. We get a lot of questions in the client meeting room these days of how is the election going to impact the market. I would point you towards signing up for the fastest 4 minutes in finance here, and we'll talk a little bit about it, but we just did a piece this week on election year and the market. You can text the word FAST to 501-381-5228 to sign up for that. And all you're signing up for is to get that 4 minute or less video about the markets in the economy delivered to your email inbox every Friday morning. That's all we're going to send you. Not going to blow your email inbox up any more than that. We just have a short video that we send out to our clients and everyone else who wants it every week. And we're talking about election year this week on the Fastest Four. And here's what we know. The average presidential election year, the market is up 7.3% as defined by the S&P 500 index. So history tells us the election year doesn't necessarily rattle the market. And in fact, when it's up ahead of Super Tuesday, mm-hmm. when there's some definitiveness on who the candidates are, that's where you get the most of your kick as a general historical look at the S&P 500. So there's not necessarily going to be a downturn, but I'll balance that, Janet, by saying there is always one coming.
Yeah.
In fact, it is very common, even if the election year does end up being higher, that we'll have a correction somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back historically, Scott, at any, I'm just going to generically say market or any investment, it is not just, okay, we were at $2 a share, then $4, then $6, then $8, then $10. It doesn't work that way. It is always going to have some up and down movement, and you've got to determine what assets, not all of them, but what assets you're okay with exposing to that type of change over time. And Scott, this is something that it didn't really hit me when we talked about this question before the show, but I want to take a moment to talk about it. Really hit me when he talks about being spooked and that he's basically kind of sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And he's scared to retire. And y'all, that's a big deal. And I'm going to go back. I know he's probably not talking about this because it's so many years ago, but I'm going to go back to 2008 because it's the worst that we've seen in my career in terms of a downturn percentage-wise. And we saw, Scott, we saw people sit on the sidelines for years. And people wouldn't come in to see us. That, you know, it wasn't, I mean, they weren't our clients. Our clients were fine. But I'm talking about people who were listening to the show, and they would listen and listen and listen and just kept going to work one day after the next and one year after the next. And they would come in, some of them in 2013, 2014, so many years after the downturn, and they would say, I'm still sitting in cash. I got scared in 2008. And so they did exactly what they're not supposed to do. The market went down. They pulled their money out because of fear. Fear will always have you do the wrong thing with your money, always, every single time. So they pulled their money out, and they didn't get back in, so they missed the upswing, and it basically became a self-fulfilling prophecy for a lot of them. But also, Scott, we saw people who could have retired. That makes me sick. Mm. When they could have retired, they wanted to retire. They didn't know that they could, but they never came in to have somebody answer those questions.
Yeah, I think that's a key point for sure. And it does highlight the importance of getting the plan together and the investment strategy that matches it prior to your retirement. Because I get it. You know, over the last couple of years that we've had with COVID 2022, if you had a heavy growth strategy, a heavy stock allocation, it could look really ugly, and that account value has dipped. And the comment we get so often from people when they first come in the meeting room is, I don't have time to make this up when it goes down. That's why the investment strategy needs to change before retirement. Mm-hmm. But I think the planning process that we go through here at GenWealth helps alleviate the thought of focus completely on the account value. We've talked about how income is the main thing, but even within the account value, you're diversified in a way that the account that may go down when the stock market goes down is not the money you're planning to draw income from anytime soon. So when you say, I don't have time to make it up, yeah, actually you do.
You do. You're right. Scott, we have a relatively new team member that I was going through this with today, in fact, and I wrote on his whiteboard it's all about the buckets and a big exclamation mark, you know, because when people ask about return, and maybe it's that they're scared about what the market's doing, or maybe it's that they're shopping return, it tells me that they don't understand this approach to retirement income, and it's critical. Mm-hmm. It is the reason, Scott, that I sleep at night very comfortably with the thousands of clients we have in retirement, knowing that I'm not worried about whether they're going to get their next paycheck, because we've got these buckets set up so that the money that you're using for income is very conservatively invested. You don't have to worry about the volatility in that bucket. The next bucket is more moderate. It's going to be your middle of the road type of return, and we want that. We're not trying to beat the S&P 500 with money that you're going to need in 10 years, because you may not have time even in that time span to recover from that. But the money that you don't need for 15 years, you know what, Scott? Again, we talked about this a week ago. We're right at that point where we're at the 15-year marker from the low point in the market of March of 2009 after the 2008 downturn. So at this point, it doesn't matter. If you're just now getting into that growth bucket, as we would call it, what happened in 2008 is completely irrelevant. But it may be that the way you have your assets invested, yeah, that it's very relevant.
Right. And if you take a look, we have a chart that we showed a week or so ago on the program too, but it bears out repeating, showing you your sequence risk, because that's what we're talking about here, taking the withdrawals from a stable bucket avoids taking the withdrawals from a market, from a stock market investment, from an investment that can be volatile. And because we don't know what kind of returns we're going to get. You know, Roger's talking about being nervous about what happened in 2020. There's always going to be something coming. And if you look at these years, that bears out. So basically what we have on the screen here for our video audience is Investor A and Investor B both started with a $500,000 portfolio. They took the same withdrawals and invested the same way in a balanced portfolio, 60-40 portfolio. So again, there was some balance in this portfolio, but it was 60% equities. And we have applied here in this example the different years of their returns, because that's the only difference, is what year did they return? What year did they retire? Investor A retired in 1966, and Investor B retired in 1976. Again, everything invested the same way. They got different returns. Investor A got a negative return right off the bat and really never recovered with his portfolio. You can see by the time he was 80, from 65 to 80, he ran out of money. Investor B did the exact same thing, and the only difference was they retired in 1976 and got a positive year in the first year, and then more positive returns. By the time Investor B was 80, they had almost $1.2 million. So it shows you the difference. We can't control the returns. We can control where we withdraw from.
So if that chart scared the fool out of you, the flooring and bucketing strategy negates sequence of return risk. That is the entire reason that we do retirement income planning the way that we do. So I just want to encourage you, if you're questioning whether you are going to be on track for retirement, or if you're closer to retirement, if you're ready to retire, don't wait. Y'all, life is short. Get your answer. If you're younger and you need to get on track so that you don't have to worry about this at the time that you're ready to retire, fabulous. Give us a call. We help people get started as well. But also, if you're at the point of retirement and you go, I just don't know, it's scary. Yes, it is scary. We get that. We see it all day, every day, but we have those answers for you. Just contact us.
Yeah, and I would say too, you know, I highlighted the importance of coming in the few years before you retire to build that plan. It's okay if you didn't.
Yeah,
you are where you are, right? You have what you have. And if you're retiring tomorrow, the plan still can make a big difference in whether you run out of money in retirement or not. So I would definitely echo what Janet said in her final thought and enter into the GenWealth Ready to Retire process. You can call 866-653-PLAN no matter where you are, toll free, 866-653-7526. And I also do want to keep the education conversation going here. We do it every week here on the Get Ready for the Future show, but we also have several opportunities to talk with us live and in person at one of our upcoming GenWealth Academy workshops. To find out more about that, I want to encourage you to visit getreadyforthefuture.com/academy to learn about when a workshop is coming near you. They are always free to attend, and we're not there to sell you anything. They are education focused. So go to our website and check that out. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. I want to thank everyone who sent in a question, and I want to remind you again, you can send in yours. Call or text them to us at 501-381-5228 or send us an email. Send it to show@getreadyforthefuture.com. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Get Ready for the Future show. If you enjoy hearing from the Gen Wealth team every week, make sure and subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to help us get the word out on building towards financial independence, leave us a rating and review. The Gen Wealth financial team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or call our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Gen Wealth Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.